emphasis of basically throwing everything down the middle and letting everything run the way it needs to be and having our catchers set up in the middle of the plate.
It's Hot Sheet. It's Scotty Braun along with Baseball America's J.J. Cooper and Ben Badler. Yes, the World Series is happening right now. We're excited about it. And actually, I think our conversation from last week is still very relevant. If you want to check that one out after this one, wherever you're listening to your pods, or if you're on the Baseball America YouTube channel, go give that a look. Get yourself a Baseball America subscription to subscribe to all the great content that's up on there and that will continue to roll through all winter long. But also just want to encourage questions right now live to the chat. If there's anything that we get that's cooking that's good later, we will cover it. But maybe this will spark a question or two. So let's hit first move, guys. All right. So JJ, do you want to give us like the bones of the Billy Carlson flip with the commitment?
I'm going to let Ben do that because Ben's the one who's been reporting that for us.
So Ben, okay, you take Ben, you start it. Give us the background. Like if I'm coming in here and I don't know a ton about how this whole scene works, because everyone is confused about college sports in general these days. So good luck.
Yeah. So the way the college baseball recruiting used to work up until very recently was these college programs were recruiting the players who they thought were the top players in the country to commit to their schools when they were as young as eighth grade, ninth grade, 10th grade, which is not an exercise of precision. So now the newer rules are you can't talk to a team or coaches can't talk to players until August 1 heading into their junior year. So Billy Carlson has been a long time standout shortstop from Southern California. I should say shortstop slash right-handed pitcher. Now the number five player in our class. He's been committed to Vanderbilt for a long time. You can see his actions right here. I mean, he's just such a silky smooth defender at shortstop. Great instincts, actions, just floats around it at shortstops, makes all the acrobatic highlight reel plays. He's got a plus-plus arm, and he had a really good summer too. Made a lot of contact. He has a lot of bat speed. His offensive game took another big step forward this summer. So he's a potential first-round pick this year, especially at shortstop. I mean, he's also up to 97 miles an hour on the mound, as a, you know, well above average spin rate on his curveball. So he's a pretty good pitching prospect too, but he had been committed to Vanderbilt. Just this past week, he flipped that commitment to Tennessee, which caught me by surprise, caught a lot of people, I think, by surprise. I mean, he's high school teammates with right-handed pitcher Seth Hernandez. He's travel ball teammates with him too. They seem to go everywhere together. They were both Vanderbilt commits. Now Billy Carlson is committed to Tennessee. So, you know, is it ultimately going to matter? Is he going to end up being a first round pick or a very high round draft pick and sign out of high school? Maybe. It's certainly trending that way. But this was a big, big, big commitment flip in the college baseball world.
And kind of is a little bit, I would say, also indicative of being a very wild recruiting year, because this is the class. We've talked about this, I think, a little bit on the show before, but this is the year of change. There's been a lot of change going on in college baseball over the last 5 years. We were not that far removed from when transfers were something that you had to sit out a year, and then obviously the transfer portal becomes wide open. We're not that far removed from, you know, adding NIL, where all of a sudden players could get paid for their name, image, likeness, which you weren't ever able to do before. I kind of would just imagine what would Kumar Rocker have made legitimately on NIL, just on advertisements and all that when he was in college. Now we get that. Okay, so those have all changed. But Ben, the thing that's also changing this year is kind of the uncertainty of all these rules changes that's kind of led to a lot more upheaval in where players are going, players decommitting, recommitting, reopening their recruitment, all that. Like, that's kind of all turning here right before signing day, which is November 13th, not that far away.
Yeah, I think for the elite players, you know, like, I don't know, there's not like any NIL money that's probably going to keep Ethan Holiday, for example, from going pro instead of going to Oklahoma State. But I think NIL money is becoming more of a factor for those guys who might not be you're not a first round pick, but you think you could be one in a couple of years, and maybe you'd rather go to school and make, you know, six figures of NIL money for a few years potentially. And you go to school, now you're potentially getting full scholarships potentially on the table now instead of the 11.7 scholarships the teams were having to divvy up among, you know, 40 players. So obviously no people are generally not getting full scholarships. So for the players who are on the back end of a roster, yeah, a lot of schools now are calling players who maybe they've had committed to them since they were in 9th grade, 10th grade, because these players just haven't developed to the level that these schools had hoped or had expected, and saying, hey, we'd love to, you know, we really want to have you, but we're potentially going from 40, you know, we're going down to 34 players pretty soon, and we just don't have space for you. Now, every year teams, you know, are making these calls to players because for the same reason, they just haven't developed the way they wanted to. Now, maybe they just have a convenient excuse for some of these players to say, Hey, we really still want to have you. It's don't blame me. We just don't have space for you now because of these new NCAA rules. So I think some of these colleges are just using that potential rule change coming up as an excuse. But I think for a lot of players who are really kind of on the back end potentially of a roster, it could be a good thing for them because, you know, now at least they know in advance that, hey, this is probably not a place where if I do go here, I'm really going to get any significant or any playing time. Now I have an opportunity to go to a program that better fits me and where I'm at as an athlete right now.
The other thing that stands out with that to me is like some of these guys are the guys who would have found out at the end of fall ball next year that, hey, there's not really a spot for you with this team. And now you're kind of getting ahead of that. But I want to go back also to the NIL thing. That the point that I would say on NIL that's kind of changed the dynamic here is you mentioned that there aren't a whole lot of first round picks. Who's the difference between signing in the first round or not? Although I think there are some guys who on that borderline of a first round pick who it maybe has swayed and said, no, don't draft me. I'm going to go to college. William Schmidt, I think is one who stands out as could have been a first round pick and kind of told everyone right before the draft, like, hey, I'm planning to go to school. But it does also change the dynamic. There's a kind of a risk reward dynamic here. If you are, let's say, a high school player and you are before the guy who's going to get $250,000, $300,000, $400,000, right? That's a lot of money. And under the old system, if your choice was that, or you were going to go to school on a partial scholarship for the chance that you could improve what you were going to make in the draft a couple of years later, it's hard to turn down six figures, right? Well, now if you're going to get full scholarship potentially with this, because the rules are changing and you're going to get money on top of that. Well, if I'm going to sign for $400,000, I don't necessarily need $400,000 to feel good about if I want to go to school, going to school. Because if I say get $100,000 even plus a full scholarship, and then I go to school, I might be able to parlay that into a seven-figure deal as a top draft pick. But even if I don't, I'm still getting that nest egg that I wouldn't have gotten before. So it does, I think, change the dynamic a lot here when you're talking about especially that second-tier high school player who could have been a third, fourth, you know, fifth rounder, 11th rounder before, but now maybe it's a little bit, now it makes more sense to go to school maybe. And by the way, the other thing with the transfer rules, maybe your first place isn't a great fit. Nowadays, you know, you can kind of bounce around and kind of get a second or a third bite of the apple, because we've also seen guys who get NIL and then they end up transferring somewhere else to be the star down the road and get a second bite of NIL.
Mm-hmm. The business has changed.
Yeah, you're not going into debt. Now we have, you know, college baseball players who are going into debt to play college baseball just because of the limitations of college scholarships. And if you're going to, you know, Duke, like some of these, like these schools are not inexpensive. The state schools are not inexpensive either. So it is a substantial change for players. And, you know, it's always, they're all, even before this, there have been players who said, you know what, I'd rather play college baseball and go play in front of packed SEC crowds and then spend my summers in the Cape Cod League instead of riding the buses in the Midwest League and the Carolina League for a couple of years. I think this only adds more incentive for players to potentially take that college baseball route. Again, obviously not for, like, you know, your Walker Jenkins, your Max Clark, those guys are going straight to pro ball. But for those guys who are in that second, third round mix or a little bit beyond who would just rather play college baseball for a few years and then try, you know, to get another crack at a signing bonus in a few years. I think it makes a lot of sense for a lot of players now.
Yeah, more info, of course, online. Check out what Ben's bringing to the table there. And let's move forward to the Arizona Fall League right now as we've got our guest of the day. Cooper Adams is joining us, playing out there in the Fall League. He's in the Red Sox system right now, finished up his season at High A Greenville. Hey, Cooper, great to have you on. How's it going out there?
It's great. It's great. Thank you guys for having me on. I didn't expect it to be this hot when I got out here, but I'm loving it. I'm loving it.
Don't get used to it. Boston is not hot like Arizona is. So you'll be able to, yeah, breezy. And hey, you played college ball in Maryland, so you probably had some cold weather games in there, didn't you?
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't think it got warm until mid-April, I think. Something like that. It was bad. It was really bad.
Well, hey, here you are now. You're in the system for a team that I actually think had a really successful pitching development season, right? Like the organization as a whole going through changes. The guy who's leading the charge there is a former big league pitcher. So with that in mind, can you give our audience a little sense of your story, how you got to this point, and also how the Red Sox are helping you get better?
Oh, yeah. For me, coming out of college, I was a guy that was like 89, 92, just really struggling to get velo, didn't really have much idea what I was doing pitch design-wise. Went to Tread Athletics in North Carolina, got the velo up to where I wanted to be, got some better pitches, added a changeup in that was really solid, and got signed by the Red Sox. And, I mean, in all honesty, I wasn't expecting the year to go the way it did. I made so many changes throughout the year, which the Red Sox helped a ton with. I mean, velo shot up a little bit, ended up adding in a new changeup, a new cutter, and then even now I'm throwing a new slider. So it's a ton of new stuff, but I'm really loved everything that the Red Sox have done so far, especially with development, because I came in as a kid that really didn't know much about what I was going to do as a pitcher, and they have been able to guide me a little bit to help have success.
I love your story, and I'm kind of fascinated by it because, you know, we kind of have that traditional, that draft day comes along and you're waiting for the phone to ring. In your case, it doesn't ring, and that's got to be kind of like, okay, so where's my path? You didn't kind of just sit back and say, well, let's see where this goes. You kind of took the approach of, did you kind of, were you hoping to have that phone? I mean, obviously you're hoping, but did you have any expectation that maybe you get drafted? Or did you think, no, I've got to get better if I'm going to be the guy that's going to be an affiliated pro guy?
Yeah, for me, I obviously everyone hopes you get a phone call. I had a conversation with one of my good friends and I was just like, I just don't think I'm there yet. So I got to get back to work. And at the time I was with my tread coach, and he was like, all right, this is where we can get better. Let's lock in on this for 6 months and then go at it. And once I did that, things started taking off, which was really nice.
Hey, Kubi, you mentioned how much the Red Sox have done for you. I mean, tell me about the Red Sox pitching development philosophy that you've experienced since you signed. What are some of the bigger principles or points of emphasis that the Red Sox have really hammered on for you and from what you've seen with your teammates is what they really value and prioritize in pitching?
The biggest thing for us was, at least what they would tell us in High A and even in spring training, was the emphasis of basically throwing everything down the middle and letting everything run the way it needs to be, and having our catchers set up in the middle of the plate instead of trying to go corner to corner. It really helped, at least for me. I know I listened to Tyler Glasnow talk about it before, and just the importance of having a target down the middle and letting your pitches go off of it, it helped me a ton. But that was something they really beat into us early was, hey, aim down the middle, because most of the time you're not going to hit the middle of the zone. So aim down the middle, let your pitches move, and should work out.
Was that scary to you here? When you hear just throw it down the middle, were you like, what? Like, has anybody ever told you that before? Or what did you think about that?
No, I was terrified. I threw a 95 mile an hour fastball trying to aim down the middle, and luckily went on the corner. I was like, man, if I threw that actually down the middle, that might have gotten crushed 500 feet.
So that's the other thing I want to ask you. You mentioned you're now, like you said, coming out of college, you were kind of in that nitro zone range, right? Like the range where it's like, hey, you know, there's a nine there on the front of the radar gun a lot of times, but not enough to where you can feel comfortable. Like, yeah, I'm going to pitch off my fastball. How could you take us through your journey of like, I mean, you kind of basically sound in some ways like what every pitcher dreams of, which is like, I'm going to really work hard. I'm going to, you know, bust it, and I'm going to find 4 or 5 miles an hour. But your example of how this can happen. So, you know, like, how did you get to the point? Was it mechanics? Was it weight work, room work? Was it all of the, you know, like, how did you find that velocity that you needed to have to get signed?
The biggest thing for me was kind of a mix of both. It was weight room and mechanics. I was a big, just dump everything into my knee and my quad, and I would quad load like crazy and then extend out. So I just had no power in my back leg. So we focused on kind of fixing that, getting myself into a better hinge position, and just being able to stay as smooth as I possibly can through my mechanics. And we would do, I think it was 70 to 80% like short boxes, just light, easy. And I remember the velo just shooting up because of the one little mechanical change. And then from there, it was just hitting the weight room, getting stronger, getting a little bit more explosive. And then, you know, just kept working on trying to throw as hard as I possibly could, leaning into the Tread Pro Day, which then obviously got signed at.
When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed at Baseball America is that it makes hiring easy. Everything's in one place. I get my applications. I get notifications when I get new applications. I get to contact prospective candidates all on Indeed. I can move people to the next level all on Indeed. And we can keep everyone on staff involved in the hiring process up to date, all at Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's time to review the top three highlights of the day. I'm joined, as always, by my co-anchor, Snoop.
Hey, what up, though?
Snoop, number one has to be getting the new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence at T-Mobile.
Yeah, you should hustle down to T-Mobile like a dog chasing a squirrel chasing a nut.
Nice analogy, Snoop. Dogs do love to chase squirrels.
And squirrels love to chase those nuts.
On to highlight number two, with T-Mobile, families can save 20% every month versus the other big guys.
That is very impressive. You know, y'all can take some of those savings and buy some Snoop merchandise.
That's exactly what I'm planning on doing with my savings, Snoop. Now, take it away, Snoop.
Head to T-Mobile.com and get the new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence on them. Now drop that jingle.
24-month upgrade is eligible traded on Go 5G Next. Well-qualified customers plus tax and $35 connection charge. Cancel entire account before receiving 24 bill credits and credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off device early. See how you can save versus the other big guys at T-Mobile.com/switch. Apple Intelligence coming fall 2024.
With Robinhood Gold, you don't need a silver spoon to eat up the financial favors of the 1%. Robinhood Gold allows the resourceful individual to earn the very liberal rate of 4.5% APY on uninvested cash, receive unlimited 1% deposit bonuses, and be rewarded with a handsome 3% retirement boost on an IRA account. Get the privileges of the high net worth for any net worth for just $5 a month. Sign up at Robinhood.com/gold. Terms apply. For product-specific disclosures, visit Robinhood.com/gold. Investing involves risk. Rate may change. Gold membership is offered by Robinhood Gold LLC.
What was that day like? That's the dream, right?
Oh yeah, it was probably one of the most nerve-wracking experiences, but it was so cool too because I had a bunch of friends there. Obviously got very close with a good amount of the coaches, so being able to go in there, see all the scouts lined up and just throw and hit a PR for me, which I think I hit 96.7, which before I'd never hit. My top was 94.9. So I was like, I've never hit 95 before. So sort of just shoot by that was crazy. And then have everybody after going, dude, that was the craziest thing ever. That was amazing. It was a pretty cool experience.
So I just got one other thing I want to ask you about this, which is congratulations. You were part of a no-hitter this year. But at the same time, it was a weird one. Y'all had two no-hitters, but, you know, as a team. But you were part of a no-hitter. But at the same time, you don't get that end of the game, like, yeah, let's, you know, like, yeah, we just won a no-hitter. What is it like to be part of a no-hitter where you lose?
That was definitely an interesting one. I will say I actually didn't realize we had a no-hitter. I had no idea. I came out of the pen and was just like, oh, okay, like normal game. And I actually end up coming out of the game and like, hey, you know, we have a no hitter, right? Like, oh, I had no idea. We got, you know, I made a couple of good plays. My center fielder that day, Justenson Garcia, made an unbelievable catch. And I was just sitting there going, oh, it's a great catch, but didn't realize he actually saved a no hitter. But it was quite an experience to just be a part of something like that. I've never thrown a no hitter in my life. Throughout my entire baseball career. So to be a part of that was pretty special.
That's really cool. All right. So let me get a little more from your experience as a pro so far. Who is the best hitter that you faced? And I mean, you can have multiple answers if you want to throw out like someone underrated that you think's going to, you know, fare well as they progress. Cause sometimes we get some good names where we're like, okay, it's a guy on our radar, but maybe not as much as the names that people know from the top of the Baseball America list. But what have you observed?
Oh, the one that always kind of gave me a tough at bat was Charles McAdoo.
Mm-hmm.
I got him a couple times, but I remember I threw a dotted slider on the outside corner and he took me off the wall. I was like, how the heck did you hit that? It made no sense to me, but he just always gave me a really, really tough at bat. Someone I always had to lock in on when he stepped in the box. And yeah, he's a really, really solid hitter.
Okay.
Traded, you were like, uh-huh. Yeah, I know.
Oh, yeah. I don't have to deal with him anymore. I'll see him in double A. So that'll be interesting. But no, he was really, really special kid. Had a really solid year. So when we finished up with Greensboro, because we only played him twice. We played him three times. Once we finished up with him, I was like, oh, I'm so happy I never have to see him again. At least for the year.
Can you explain what the scheduling is like, you know, in the minor leagues in A-ball for people that are unaware, you know, how often you're facing a team and how for someone like you, you might be seeing the same guys quite frequently and you know, how that factors into developing and just working on your pitches and getting better as a player versus also making sure that the overexposure to the same hitters causes you to think more about how you want to attack them?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting when you have six games in 1 week and you're facing the same opponent. Because like you said, there's those games where you go Tuesday and then Thursday and then Sunday. And at least for us in high A, we did more of kind of two weeks, maybe one a week, maybe three a week situations where like you get Tuesday, Sunday. But even facing that lineup again, those guys have seen your best stuff, seen your fastball, everything that you have. So you kind of have to mix things up. That was something I had to learn quickly, because obviously in college, a lot of the times they'd have us do the wrist thing where they tell us what to pitch. And I can never shake off. So I was learning throughout the season how to pitch these guys, how to read swings, how to get better with all that. And yeah, it's definitely hard when you're facing a really solid high A team and you face them the first time and you beat them with a couple pitches and you're like, oh yeah, I got them. And then you face them like a couple days later and you're trying to do the same thing and they have you down. They're racking you all over the place. And you're like, wait, I got them earlier with this. How is it, you know, not doing the same thing? But they're, you know, like I said, really, really solid hitters. They can make, you know, good pitches turn into really bad pitches really quickly. So yeah, it's just kind of learning how to play to your strong suits, play to your strengths, but understand that you can't go there every single time.
Yeah, it's a good point, because sometimes we'll go, oh, that was a great pitch just from optics. But was it a great pitch? Because they might have set themselves up for this pitch, right? So I think that's a good point, where sometimes like, hey, you give the guy the same dose of medicine too often when he's a pro, he's going to figure it out if it's in the right spot for him. So it's a great point. Hey, it was awesome talking to you. Thanks for taking the time. Good luck following the storyline. We love it. And enjoy the heat out there while it's starting to chill up, you know, in the Northeast.
Will do, will do. And thank you guys for having me on, and be talking to you guys soon.
Yeah, absolutely. We hope the same thing. Thank you, Cooper. Appreciate you. Cooper Adams with us on Hot Sheet. So you'll see him obviously, hopefully in Double A coming up this season. He was in High A Greensville and out there in the Arizona Fall League right now playing with Mesa. So fun conversation. And I want to flip that right over to Ben to take over again. So we covered college, we're covering the prospect world. Let's get to the international signing class review and what you've been working on lately. You want to lay out what's happening?
Yeah, so the international signing period, which technically is still open, but basically is done at this point, started on January 15th this year. All these players have now played in the Dominican Summer League, and you know, 99% of cases, a couple guys have played already in the States, obviously, like Leo Dallas DeVry being the biggest one with the Padres, the number one international prospect this year. So look, there's still so much time to go. Most of these players are still 17 years old, some of them maybe just turned 18 years old. Sure, there will be pop-up guys coming up over the next few years where, you know, we get calls from a scout who's, what do you have on this guy? I just saw him throwing 99 miles an hour in the backfields in Florida or something. But, you know, I think we have a pretty good sense, at least to start, which teams are off to really good starts this year with their international classes so far.
So, okay, Ben, just give us like the highlights of it. Like, what is one that surprised you? Because again, obviously, I'm taking the Padres essentially off the table by saying that, because, you know, as is normally the case, the Padres kind of are in the all-in approach, I would say, where, you know, they are going to sign one of the best players in the class. But what was another, you know, a team that really, an organization that really kind of jumped out to you as one that, like, the more you dug into it, you're like, oh, this one really stands out?
I think the Cardinals jumps out for me as having, you know, like the Brewers being on here, the Dodgers. Okay, I think they've pretty consistently signed really good international players over the last, you know, 3-5 years. But the Cardinals are a team, you know, you look in their top 30 prospects, there's not a ton of Latin American talent in there, homegrown Latin American talent. But you look at their class that they signed this year, it's pretty exciting. I mean, Yairo Padilla, shortstop, switch inning shortstop they signed out of the Dominican Republic. He was their top position player that they signed. He has a chance to be one of the best shortstops that they've signed from Latin America in quite a while, which maybe speaks some to just the lack of shortstops that they've signed from Latin America, but also Padilla's talent too. I mean, just a really lanky, lean switch hitter, young for the class, really good pitch recognition, makes a lot of contact, and you can see a ton of strength projection too in his frame. You know, maybe he didn't see huge power numbers this year, but you can see the bat speed. You can see all the room he has to layer on more strength, potentially grow into a, you know, 2025 home run type guy. Is he going to stay at shortstop or not? I too soon to say, but he's going to play somewhere in the infield with a chance to stay at shortstop and a lot of things to like, especially offensively from both sides of the plate. Raniel Rodriguez, a catcher who they signed, who just had an unbelievable year. Definitely an offensive-minded catcher. Not certain yet whether he's going to stay at that position or not, but if he can, it's a pretty exciting offensive profile, especially, I mean, he had 10 home runs this year, which is fourth in the league. Big combination of on-base skills and especially power. Not like the biggest guy in the world, but really, really strong. Hit some long, long home runs this year. And then their top signing was overall in terms of bonus was Brunelli Franco, who, maybe on paper, the ERA is high, not the best statistical year, but all lean, projectable right-handed pitcher who's up to 96 miles an hour at 17 years old, transitioning from a curveball to a slider, showing feel for that pitch too, with some good break on it. So certainly a lot of good components with that pitch. So they were one of the teams that, hasn't maybe recently been been signing the kind of impactful classes some of these other, those other clubs I just mentioned, but I think they're off to a really strong start with their class this year.
So I did see during the postseason, there was a question asked to Andrew Friedman that said, "Hey, you guys have, I expect like $2+ million, available still in the international market. Is that being saved in case?" And, Andrew Friedman's like, but understandably, like this was literally the day after game one. He's like, not really the time. Can we talk a little bit about, the dramatic win we just had? But I will start this by saying, I don't know why, obviously we're going to be hearing about Roki Sasaki this offseason. I don't know why. I could say this about Shohei Ohtani kind of too at the time, but I don't know why Roki Sasaki would come over this offseason coming off of really kind of a little bit of a down year for him by his very lofty standards, but also not that far removed from the point where he can post as a veteran international free agent. Have 7 years, you can be posted and you can sign a major league free agent deal. If you come over as Ohtani did before that, you end up signing as an international amateur, which means you're very limited, especially at this time of the year, if it was not waiting for the year to kick over on January 15th. But Ben, is that one something like, would you be shocked to see someone, post again, a Sasaki or someone like that at this point in the year, with all the money that's already been spent? Or do you think that there's any possibility of something like that happening?
I think it's a possibility. I mean, you're right. Like, why do it now instead of wait? But you could say the same thing for Ohtani when he was in that situation, and he still made that jump. It could be, whether it's, the Dodgers could have money to spend on him this signing period, or something could wait until next signing period when, yes, technically or maybe unofficially is a better word, a lot of teams have committed most, if not all, of their bonus pool money for the upcoming signing period that starts January 15th, 2025. But if Roki Sasaki is available, there are a lot, if not most, or maybe all teams that would be very willing to just blow up all of those pre-agreed to arrangements to be able to sign Roki Sasaki. Because, I don't care how good you think the 16 or 17 year old shortstop you have, the top of your class from the Dominican Republic, Roki Sasaki, if he signs, he's going to step in day one and be a top 10 prospect in baseball. And I'm being conservative, probably just saying top 10.
Yeah. The best way I can put it is this brings it full circle. Remember those calls that were coming in where it's like, oh, I'm really sorry, but we only have 34 players now, so we'd love to still have you. That's kind of the calls that would be happening there. It's like, we really like you, but at the same time, Roki Sasaki wants to join us, and so we're, if that
happens. For cheap, too, relative to what he would get on the open market.
100%. Yeah,
of course. And think about it. For as much as we dissected what Ohtani decided to do, worked out pretty well for him. Even financially, who knows what happens? If he's just a free agent on his own and someone talks him into a super long-term deal, let's say at the time it was 10, 12 years, $200-something million, well, he actually would have cost himself a ton of money, right? He reached free agency and then did quite well for himself. He comes over to the States, presumably already is making more in marketing dollars right from the jump there. And we know he makes tens of millions of dollars a year on that front. So yeah, it did work for him. If you're Sasaki, you're like, whatever that guy did, I'm going to try and do it like he did. Like, if I feel like I want to go over to the States And now's the time. I'm going to jump. I'm not going to worry about the rules. I'll get to free agency again and bet on myself. So we'll see. Great combo.
A rookie Sasaki can't hit like Shohei. So, you know, this is the more normal. This is the more normal prospect coming over, the pitcher, not, you know, prospect, but a pitcher coming over who, I will say, has had a stretch already in the MPB that is, to me, one of the best stretches, two-start stretch we've ever seen in baseball, to throw a perfect game and then leave the following game and your bullpen blows it, but you had another one. Like, that's just, I can't even imagine. I can't even describe.
You know how teams are feeling about him right now when they hear that and think, maybe I can get him for not much for a long period of time to secure an arm like that. So not the last time we'll be talking about him. Ben, thank you. JJ, thank you. And of course, thanks to everyone for watching. And we'll keep the guests flowing. Cooper Adams, thank you for joining us today too. We'll see you like we do now every week, 3:30 Eastern time, live on the YouTube channel for Baseball America. It's Hot Sheet. Join us. Otherwise, catch it afterwards on YouTube or wherever you get your pods. And we will see you next week after the World Series is done. And yes, I know what you're going to remind me. Go ahead. You say it.
I was going to say, and next week we're starting we'll be talking about the NL East, because next week at Baseball America, we're going to start rolling out our top 10s. Our top 10 prospects start as soon as the World Series is over. So we're going to look at the farm systems of the National League East next week. How do they shape up? What are the strengths? What are the weaknesses? So check out next week, Hot Sheet Show, Mets, Braves, Nationals, Phillies, Marlins.
Yep, we'll go division by division. We'll see you next week.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.